And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and Phil Conlon is here. Hi, Phil.
Good afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to talk to Ishmael Reed. And Ishmael Reed is a poet, novelist, essayist, songwriter, playwright, editor, and publisher. And one has won many awards for his writing. He's the author of some wonderful books, Mumbo Jumbo, the novel, Shrovetide in Old New Orleans, a collection of essays, which is a classic collection, by the way, and a great title, Reckless Eyeballing, which I highly recommend, one of my favorite books by Ishmael Reed, favorite books by anybody. Later, by the way, we will be talking to Toronto lawyer Chris Black. He has his client, for whom he won an acquittal at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, has finally, after years and years and years of being in prison, has been allowed to go home. He's been sitting in a prison, despite the fact he had been acquitted. So that'll be coming up at about 5:30. And I believe we're joined now by the poet and novelist and essayist and songwriter, playwright, Ishmael Reed. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Hi. How are you?
Hi. Good. And sure good to be talking to you, because there's a lot of going on in your former neck. I know you're from Tennessee, and there seems to be a lot of things going on in Missouri, which is a neighboring state.
Right.
I want to ask you today, of course, about the events in Ferguson, the horrible, the killing of Michael Brown, and the way the community reacted and the nation reacted. But then the evolution of this subject of racism in America and disparity in justice, as it affected the very high-profile athletes, Mr. Adrian Peterson of the Minnesota Vikings,
right,
and of Ray Rice.
Ray Rice.
Yeah. And for me, by the way, I just tell you, the starting point for me was a headline of the Toronto newspaper that when Mr. Rice was suspended, they said, pig skinned. I thought, well, this is an indicator that we have a bigger problem here. Maybe let's start with Ferguson itself. You wrote an essay about the events in Ferguson, and I think you titled it "A Few Bad Apples" or "Bad Apples in Ferguson."
That was the line that the media supported. That police brutality and police shootings are only perpetrated by a few bad apples. And according to what I've read and what I've experienced, we have a case of bad apple dumb. I mean, what I call it, because police brutality and the shooting of innocent blacks and Hispanics is a widespread happening here. But, of course, the people who are in charge of the narrative on all of the issues that I experienced or view in this country have not had that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
I say that the police show them their Dr. Jekyll side, and they show us Mr. Hyde.
Well, on that, yes, and you know, by the way, it appeared to be some sort of breakthrough. Everybody said, oh, this is one of those teaching moments, but I don't think the lessons don't seem to be getting through exactly. You touched on the fact that this is not a one-off. Obviously, within almost hours in the city of St. Louis, there was another police shooting of a young man who was threatening nobody, actually. They said he had a knife, but he wasn't around anyone, and he was facing an armed man, and the armed man shot him.
Well, you know, the media narrative down here was that Michael Brown caused his death. That was the line promoted by Nicholas Kristof,
mm-hmm,
who tried to make some kind of a equivalency between the officer's actions and Michael Brown's actions. So he said that if Michael Brown had more training as a child, it wouldn't have resulted in his, he wouldn't have been shot.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't specify what kind of training he meant. But we get a lot of moral lessons from the editorial pages of the New York Times and other places about how blacks should behave. Now, a another part of this argument is that on MSNBC and other places was that this is just a black problem when they shoot Hispanics too.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there have been three or four shootings of Hispanics in Salinas, California, which is nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's a big problem between the police and the Hispanics in Los Angeles. But mm-hmm. one case happened, and you can see it on YouTube. Just go to Police Shooting Salinas on YouTube. It was a Hispanic gardener who mm-hmm. was going from door to door with his gardening tools, attempting to seek some work.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there was a language problem. He was confronted by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a mirror of what happened in Ferguson. The man turned around, he has gardening tools, and they shot him.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were demonstrations in Salinas. Mm-hmm. They weren't covered by the media because they want to make everything in this country a result of black personal behavior. That's the line that's been trickled down from the top.
Yeah, I noticed that was a theme of your part of the article, the argument, that there seems to be a desire to make this into a black American issue. And I think you gave an example of CNN running a poll, and it said white Americans think and black Americans think. And you said
Hispanics not included.
And yeah, no, no brown people included. And you pointed out that actually the population is about 50-50 now, but they want to make it's us in that black minority, right?
Well, but when Hispanics agree with them, with their narrative, then blacks are left out. So there was a recent poll about Obama's ratings, and because the Hispanics in California are only supporting, there's been a decline in support among Hispanics in California. So they come in at 47% support for Obama because he's postponed his decision on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Yet blacks are left out of that poll.
They didn't ask.
No, they didn't ask blacks this time.
Yeah,
you see, because you know blacks are probably blacks are still very supportive of the president, so they mm-hmm. didn't ask them.
Yeah.
But when Hispanics and blacks have an alliance, say on the question of police brutality,
mm-hmm.
and there have been demonstrations where both communities have demonstrated against police brutality, they make it a black-white issue.
Yeah, and incident. I think you mentioned also Native American, who absolutely come in for the worst treatment in every department.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and you go to Indian country and you'll find there's a publication called Indian Country, which is online, and mm-hmm. you'll find a number of cases during which a confrontation between police and a Native American has ended in fatality for the Native American person.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking.
So the whole intent of the media and public relations is not to best the opinion of the majority of whites.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get Hispanics and blacks agreeing on something, and that means that the majority of whites are marginalized. And you know, I call CNN the Zimmerman Wilson network
mm-hmm.
because there seemed to be more sympathy for the shooters in both cases, the vigilante and the policeman, then for the victim.
Mm-hmm. Well,
as a matter of fact, one more thing.
Yeah.
They hired Mark O'Mara. CNN actually hired this prosecutor who used all kind of sinister methods to indict the victim, Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
In one instance, he circulated material about smearing the reputation of Trayvon Martin, and it turned out to be not true. But the damage had been done. See, the idea was to reach a jury of all whites. I think there was one Hispanic on the jury. To smear the reputation so that they get the outcome they wanted. They hired him.
Yeah.
Sort of like a prize.
Yeah.
And he's been defending the policeman. Now, let me tell you one new development.
Mm-hmm.
There are two white construction workers. Have you heard about that, right?
No, I don't think so. Please.
Two white construction workers were filmed at the instance of the shooting, and they had their hands up
mm-hmm.
to show that, you know, Michael Brown had his hands up. Now, all of a sudden, Jeffrey Toobin and all these other commentators are saying, well, maybe he was shot in cold blood. Now, there are 11 black witnesses who saw the same thing. Their testimony was discounted.
Well, by the way, isn't it time to remind people that there was not so long ago in our history that black people could not be on juries?
That's right. That was certainly in California history and elsewhere. Because their words are not
can't be trusted.
Kind of credibility. Yeah, we lie. You know.
There's an automatic. Automatic suspicion.
I get fact checked rigorously by the media. Some of which print my articles and opinions. But I see all kind of loose ideas going on in the same newspapers. For example, I've been contributing to the Times since 1976 or so, and here comes Nicholas Kristof, who was our moral leader, the moral leader of black people.
Yes.
And he...
protector of black women.
Yeah, right. I wrote a satire about him in Counterpunch, where he gets all his information about blacks from his maid, and the maid asks for a consultancy.
That was, you know. That's a brilliant piece. Please, everybody, go to Counterpunch.
But anyway, he said he hoisted up Asian Americans again as a mild minority. Asian American intellectuals hate that. They say, you know, there are problems of sex trafficking, there's a problem of drug peddling, all kinds of these issues happening, but they always use the model minority image of Asian Americans to shame blacks. And I wrote a piece that was published in The Nation magazine about all of a sudden they realized there's a heroin epidemic among whites. And I had to remind them that we knew about this in 1995. But now they're just waking up to that because they see, you know, drugs, all American sins as a black issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I mentioned at the end of the article a Asian American journalist who discounted the model minority myth.
Mm-hmm. Well, now again on Michael Brown and on this point about the way they treat. Here he is; his body was left laying in the street for four hours.
That's like in the old days putting an enemy's head on a
stake,
a pole.
Sure.
To warn the other people, warn the other enemy. You
know? Yeah. So the St. Louis Post Dispatch is all over the state demanding that they got to have the juvenile records of Michael Brown because they want to get that. Now you notice what they found. The authorities came forward and said, okay, well, we looked at the records and he had in the categories, which it would be serious categories of types of theft and violence. He has a clean record, and so that's category A and category B. So the St. Louis Patch said, we want to see category C, which might include littering.
Yeah, well,
he might have littered.
The media has been pro police against blacks. They used to be pro police against the Irish. But
yes.
That was before the Irish became white.
Yes.
One time the Irish.
One of the great books, How the Irish Became White.
Right. They're one time they were considered Hibernians, you know, a different race.
Yes.
But they've graduated. But they used to use defend the police against the Jewish people and the Irish people. So they've always defended the police, and they're defending the police in this case. Out here, when Oscar Grant was shot, his killer was described by the local newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle, as a gentle giant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're
promoting
the shooter.
Yeah.
And his associates swear by him. He's a community guy and all that. And that word is always taken, by the way. That's acceptable. But
well, Darrell Wilson. Go ahead. They're always showing Darrell Wilson as receiving a citation. Mm-hmm. For taking down a drug dealer, but the drug dealer says he's roughed up by the guy.
Yeah. We're speaking to Ishmael Reed, poet, novelist, essayist, songwriter, playwright, editor and publisher, and, of course, the recipient of many, many awards, and author of Mumbo Jumbo, and a couple of my personal favorites, Reckless Eyeballing and Flight to Canada. Everybody here should want to read Flight to Canada. Incidentally, you can go to IshmaelReed.com. That's a great site.
IshmaelReed.org.
Oh,
IshmaelReed.org.
Oh, I got it.
.org.
Yeah. I protect the comms from the .org, or the org from the other. Now, there's a vortex developing here, and I can't avoid the sort of natural connection. Sunday at the L.A. Rams, there used to be the L.A. Rams, the St. Louis Rams played the Dallas Cowboys, and people from Ferguson, some community leaders, and I actually don't know who they were, but they said, no justice, no football, and they went to have a demonstration. And all the press said, well, that was a flop. What a bunch of bums. They should have arrested them, etc., because they're raising the issue of the fact that the officer has not been charged and the police chief hasn't resigned, and both of them, one of them killed a man who was unarmed, and the other one tried to ruin the reputation of the young victim and also lied about the facts surrounding the case, which inflamed the community and created these demonstrations. So they wanted to call that attention to the wider St. Louis community. But there's an eclipse has developed because everybody's talking about now domestic violence and Adrian Pearson and Ray Rice.
The only perpetrators in the world.
Pardon my paranoid mind, but you know, it just seems to work out. Here we were talking about racism in America and how it had not gone away and how it had to be faced. And all of a sudden, we have two new poster children for causes. Violence against women and abuse of children.
Well, I think here again...
And both of them are black.
Because why is it always when a black celebrity or a athlete messes up, we begin a national discussion about these issues? Mm-hmm. From Clarence Thomas, I'm not defending him, to today, that it takes Kobe Bryant or Mike Tyson or someone like that, or Floyd Mayweather, all these people got dragged into this issue in a sort of situation of collective blame. And I think that's racism. Mm-hmm. So all black men have been indicted. As a matter of fact, David Zirin, who is sort of like the judge of black athletes, he even criticized Michael Jordan and Pele. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they participated in domestic violence. I don't think so. But he's been called in the media to evaluate us. And today, he implied on MSNBC, which is leading the lynch mob, this particular network, that spousal abuse was a peculiarly black thing.
Yes.
And being a liberal, he blamed it on slavery and what else? Racism.
Yes.
So
without data, but I don't see the data. As a matter of fact, that's really where I wanted to go with this. Why is it everybody's given a chance to broadcast these really dangerous opinions or shocking opinions, and they don't back it up?
Well, I tried to deliver some data today. Just as Greta Van Susteren and Nancy Grace became celebrities as a result of the O.J. Simpson case, nobody ever heard of these two before they were brought on to slam that case and discuss it. Now they have a new hero named Hannah Storm. Hannah Storm works for ESPN. Mm-hmm. And today, she was on the front page of the Times, written by men, of course, because I think bourgeois feminism is the greatest thing that capitalism has invented. But anyway, she said that she had a difficult time explaining the two characters, you know, Rice and the other guy, to her daughters. So I tried to get on the comment page of the Times saying that two-thirds of the child abuse in this country is perpetrated by women, and there are statistics on this. This doesn't go along with the narrative, the money making or the profit making narrative, and so you know it wasn't printed. Mm-hmm. But according to the United States Justice Department, two thirds of the spousal abuse here is perpetrated by women, and one brave feminist pointed out that one of these black guys said he had been beaten by his mother, that he was spanked with a switch. Mm-hmm. By his mother. Now, during the same period, within the last 4 months, one white man murdered five of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And this didn't begin a national discussion about child murder. And as a matter of fact, as usual, they gave the guy an out. They said, well, maybe he was on PCP, synthetic marijuana, so he's not responsible. And this guy in South Africa, what's his name, the Olympian?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I don't know his name.
Yeah. Murdered his wife.
Yes.
Murdered his girlfriend.
Yes, he's going to be back on the track.
Pond. I said he murdered a blonde, which must be one for the Guinness Books of Records.
Yes.
Got off, murdered a blonde. And the women on MSNBC and elsewhere were very sympathetic to him.
And he's going to be back on the track.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll probably get a book deal.
Uh-huh. Indeed.
He'll probably get a book. Yeah, a movie deal. Yeah. He could play the killer, you know.
Well, I was reading a couple of accounts in today's...
One more thing. Mm-hmm. Within the last few days, a white man killed his daughter and her six children, mm-hmm. his six grandchildren. Mm-hmm. This is a one-day story, and it doesn't mm-hmm. lead to a national discussion of the murder of children, the treatment of children.
No,
one guy spanks his child excessively, and I admit that, and this becomes like the whole world has to pay attention to this.
Yes, and by the way, the NFL has prayer circles, and those are organized by the evangelicals, and 80% of American evangelicals believe in using the rod. Because spare the rod and spoil a child, this isn't, they're not quibbling. If I were interviewing them, they'd say, yes, sir, we believe
in it. Absolutely.
And
I'll tell you what.
And by the way, those are majority white. They're not black.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is that, you see how this graduated was that, and they use bourgeois black feminists to carry out the orders. These are women who work for awful corporations like... MSNBC is owned by Comcast, mm-hmm. which has all wealthy middle-aged white male board of directors. I mean, they talk about, well, why don't we get more women in the NFL? Mm-hmm. Well, they work for Comcast, and Comcast supports an organization called ELEC, which is going around the country suppressing black voters and mm-hmm. anti-abortion and right-wing corporations. So they work there, and they use them to go after minority men. Now, first, it was Ray Rice, and then it graduated to Floyd Mayweather, all the oldies but goodies, O.J. Mm-hmm. and all this. Mm-hmm. And then, last weekend, Hispanic males were included. Mm-hmm. One group was left out, and that's the group to which the people who run those networks belong.
Yes.
The typical domestic abuser in this country is a white male.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned the study in Nation Magazine, but at least I got it printed there, but there's a SUNY study, University of New York.
Yes.
Online. It's called Domestic Violence in White Families.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the middle class and privileged white women say they've been battered or seen their mothers, sisters, and daughters battered.
Mm-hmm.
The two women who did the study said they were shocked that this was happening in middle class homes. The same thing about heroin. Mm-hmm. Heroin has been, there have been heroin epidemics in the white communities, like suburbs of Dallas and other places, for years. They're just now waking up to it. So I say that the media has a no snitch policy when it comes to white pathology. And that happens in this case right here with the football player.
Yeah. Well, I should mention that another piece of information I picked up from Salon, an article which backed it up with the data. The writer said that the NFL, their rate of abuse, so-called domestic abuse, domestic violence, is amongst players is lower than the ordinary the data for the society at large. So
that's not going to make any money for the network. That kind of reasoning.
Yeah, it's mentioned on CIUT, but it ain't going to be on CBC. I know that.
Absolutely.
But I mean, he just stated it as a bald fact. And this has something to do with people being prosperous, because prosperous people they can handle problems differently than poor people can handle them. Yeah, I wonder what your thoughts are about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on Ferguson. He said that this is a class war, the situation at Ferguson, and class comes into this.
Well, I don't know. I think majority of Americans see blacks as being members of the same class. So Henry Louis Gates thought he was scot-free. Excuse me for using that ethnic slur.
Yeah.
But he thought that he was liberated because he was a post-race professor, and the police mm-hmm. treated him like they treat somebody out here in the streets, except that they would have called SWAT. Now, if somebody in my neighborhood had given him a cop's lips, they would have called SWAT. and brought the tanks in.
Yeah, and bad things so could have happened before he explained himself.
The class argument doesn't work here because middle class and upper class blacks, and I consider myself an upper middle class person, we get profiled by the police too, and even the Attorney General said he was profiled by the police.
Yes. Well, I remember Marcus Allen, I think his name is, the great running back from the Oakland Raiders. And he said that he carried his driver's license on a something around his neck so that he wouldn't have to reach in his pocket when he was pulled over.
Right.
Can you imagine a millionaire athlete who thinks ahead knowing that he could be shot?
Yeah, I was racially profiled in the cemetery here. My spouse and I were doing our errands, and we decided to take a walk in the cemetery here, which is a historic, landmark. And I was sort of like relaxing in front of this mausoleum, enjoying myself. They called the cops. Yeah. My spouse came back, and she said, "Well, maybe it's a coincidence." I said, "No, when I leave, they'll leave," and that's what happened.
Yes, now my memory is that I saw the article where you referred to this. It might be the Ferguson article. I hope people will find that account of it. You mentioned that, however, in your neighborhood, when you thought you saw criminal groupings and you called the police, nobody came.
Oh, no. We had crack houses until recently in this neighborhood. It's been regentrified now. But we had crack houses since 1989 in this neighborhood.
And nobody came on your phone.
Well, none of the police interrupted the crack houses. Private citizens.
But when you walked for 5 minutes in a cemetery, they showed up.
Oh yeah, sure. They can't. Yeah, absolutely. I go to these neighborhood crime council meetings, and that's always a complaint. Mm-hmm. And so I once asked the police, like, "What do you really do?" They have all kinds of excuses why they can't help us. And I think a lot of it has to deal with bribery. I think that there's so much money in drug trafficking that from coast to coast. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of corruption. Now, they were talking about bad apples. Mm-hmm. In one precinct in Harlem, 30 cops were caught in instances of corruption. And if you look at the Village Voice, if somebody wants to Google this, the Village Voice newspaper, villagevoice.com, there was a policeman, what's this guy's name, Scorpio? There was this policeman a couple of years ago who recorded the instructions that the police get when they clock in, and he recorded the police saying that they should single out black people to fill their quota. So this happens across the country, and the latest issue of the East Bay Express, which is published in the town where I live, there's the police out of control here. Nobody can control the police. They have defied federal orders. There's court order for them to shape up. They haven't done that. So because the white majority is so fearful of, right now it's ISIS, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, throughout American history, 19th century was Indian, they give the mandate to the police. The police couldn't operate this way if there wasn't, if they didn't receive a mandate from the white majority. So as a result...
A wink...
Police run these towns.
We're speaking to Ishmael Reed, and I want to mention I was reading James Baldwin, and I always recommend, please, James Baldwin, Ishmael Reed, Amiri Baraka. There, some quote that he was so quotable, by the way, beautiful man. He said about black Americans. Needing the protection of the law and due process because the phenomena of lynching, the phenomena of mass hysteria, etc. And it just, these things come to mind in these issues. Why is it that the rights of an individual who someone says he did something, maybe he's even said that he did do something, but that doesn't eliminate due process where you adjudge whatever the significance of that is. Why are we having to be told that this is so important for the country, this is so important for a multi-million-dollar, billion-dollar sports network enterprise to take over the job of judging? And I want to raise a detail in connection to it. I have a headline from the Business Week, an article by Tony Manfred. He says, you know, Minnesota can cut Peterson without paying him a dime of the $56 million that they would be planning to pay him. They could just cut him now and save themselves $56 million. I mean, that is doing something outside the the due process where he can make answer and all that. But now they can. This guy's been judged.
This is the kind of hysteria that got the Central Park Five convicted. Mm-hmm. That and the bourgeois feminist movement played a role in that. Played a role in that. And
yes.
White militants like Joe Klein. I mean. Mm-hmm. Joe Klein has a Time magazine where he's always saying that black culture is the cause of. He said black culture was the cause of what happened to Michael Brown. Now, in 1989, he wrote a long article about the morals of the Central Park Five. Of course, they turned out to be innocent. I don't know if he ever apologized. But we have people like Joe Klein.
He's not that kind of Christian.
Well, yeah, Nicholas Kristof and a whole bunch of others who. Now, incidentally, Joe Klein, who says that black people ought to be urged to go to church. He turned out to be one of the biggest liars in the 70s or 90s, excuse me, when mm-hmm. he lied about his authorship of Primary Colors. You remember that?
Yes, yeah. he didn't tell exactly.
Yeah, he lied about it.
To protect his income.
He's been paid by Time Magazine for recycling the same article. Every time an incident like what happened in Ferguson happens, he blames it on black culture, which is a line coming from the establishment. Now, this is interesting right here, is that the hypocrisy of these networks, where they have their only problems of sexism, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, I recommend that your listeners read a book called News Lady by Carol Simpson.
Mm-hmm. News Lady.
Carol Simpson was there. Yeah, mm-hmm. News Lady it's called, News Lady.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
She had to self-publish it because the networks were so powerful, ABC and NBC, that she couldn't get a New York publisher. And she said she was groped by guys, and one guy tried to undress her, some NBC executive, and mm-hmm. and call her a slut and all kind of names. Now, if the women who are been brought on to blast the brothers took that on, they'd be fired. Let me give you another example. They brought a woman on from USA Today to jump on Ray Rice. USA Today.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name? Barbara Reynolds
mm-hmm.
was a black reporter for USA Today. Because she did not appeal to what they call the angry white man demographic, she was fired. The security guard escorted her out of the building, and she had a heart attack that night. And then there was another woman who came on to jump on.
That's in relation to the Rice business, the Ray Rice story.
Yeah, there was a man from USA Today, a reporter, who came on in. MSNBC was being very sanctimonious and self-righteous about these football players. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying he works for an outfit, USA Today, that treated this woman that way. Now, one other example. There was another woman who was brought on to talk about Rice and the other guy, and she works for Bloomberg News.
Mm-hmm.
When Michael Bloomberg was mayor, and this you can Google this in the New York Times, black and Hispanic women said that the NYPD use stop and frisk as an excuse to molest them sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if she talked about that, she'd be fired. So what I'm pointing out is that there's been a festival, what I call a festival of hypocrisy in this whole reporting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we couldn't have picked a better note on which to end. I hope you write an article titled exactly that.
I can only get my views in Canada, like those slaves, fugitive slaves in the 19th century. They could only go to Canada and get their...
Flight to Canada. By the way, yes, you have a book, The Complete Muhammad Ali. It's due out from Baraka Books. We look forward to that.
We
look forward to all your writings. And, of course, I tell people the most recent that we're speaking of today were published, I know, in Counterpunch. This is Ishmael Reed, the poet, novelist, essayist, songwriter, playwright, editor, and publisher. Hey, thanks an awful lot.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay, take it easy. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.
Yep.
Bye.
That's Ishmael Reed, and couldn't be more timely. I'm walking up Roncesvalles at the corner of Marion and Roncesvalles. Go look for yourself. There's a poster, something to do with protecting women. And that's all well and good. It says against sexual exploitation. And the photograph is of a young black woman, and it's about 1 meter by 1 meter. And she's looking ahead with her eyes open, and there's a large black male hand over her mouth. And I don't what's the connection between women issue, I understand, okay, and a black woman as the face of this issue, and a black male hand. And I'm going to tell those people, in my opinion, that's racist. They ought to trash that thing and start again. And if they want a reference to do a little homework before they start talking the way they are, they ought to go to the writings of Ishmael Reed. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. This is the Taylor Report. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. We're at Taylor-Report.com and Taylor's / The Taylor Report.